And that's the end. Thank you for being on the show.
Not quite. Welcome to another episode of Just the Discs. My name is Brian Sauer. This is my podcast about Blu-rays. My lovely and adorable wife, boy, if you could see the eye rolls, that just doesn't play on radio, has joined me again for a short discussion of a recent film. Hello, my dear.
Hello.
We are talking about Wind River from director Taylor Sheridan from 2017.
I need emergency assistance.
What's your location?
The Wind River Indian Reservation.
I'm Jane Banner, FBI.
Welcome to Wyoming.
You by yourself?
It's just me.
That's Corey Lambert. He's the one who found the body.
This is a homicide.
I knew that girl. She's a fighter.
They have six officers to cover an area the size of Rhode Island. Maybe you can help.
Well, I know what the tracks say.
What is it that you do again?
I hunt predators.
So why don't you come hunt one for me then? Why would a teenage girl be out here? What is she running from?
You're looking for clues, but you're missing all the signs.
Shouldn't we wait for backup?
This isn't the land of backup, Jane. This is a land of you're on your own.
Watch the best!
Oh, my God. You won't get the answers you're looking for, no matter what you find. Why would your daughter run from home?
I don't know why. She didn't tell me. Out here, you cannot blink. Not ever.
This place, what it takes from us. What it took from you.
I got lucky.
Luck lives in the city.
Get your hand up that weapon! Hey!
Luck don't live out here.
Taylor Sheridan is the writer of Hell and High Water.
It was easier to talk about that because I didn't direct it. You know, I wrote it, and so my obligation to it and my commitment to it was, you know, on the page, and then I was very happy with the result. You know, when you direct something, it's never finished. It's never done. And it's much more like a relationship that you're fostering. When you write something, it's like your little baby, then your little baby grows up, and then you get to go watch it, you know, off in the world. When you direct it, it's a marriage. It's you and this thing. And there's no separating the two, you know. I mean, there's just innate difficulties to directing, you know. It's well beyond simply having an artistic vision and then trying to go execute this thing. You know, directing in its simplest form is you're building a house, and the directing of the movie is actually, you know, going to Home Depot and getting all the stuff to build the house. And you got to make sure you get enough stuff that you can construct it in the edit bay, you know, the way you intended it to look. So I just think that's probably the best metaphor for this whole process, you know.
He also wrote Sicario, which is interesting. You don't remember that one?
Why do I know that name, but I can't think of what it is?
It's the one with Emily Blunt is the drug cop that goes and they dig bodies out of it. Anyway, I don't want to spoil the whole movie, but I was thinking that one sort of tied into this in some way just because of the female protagonist, sort of law enforcement. Anyway, the basic plot of Wind River is that it is, as the back says, a chilling thriller that follows a rookie FBI agent played by Elizabeth Olsen who teams up with a game tracker with deep community ties and a haunted past, and that's played by Jeremy Renner, to investigate the mysterious killing of a local girl on a remote Native American reservation.
You know, I came up with the idea for Sicario fairly quickly. I was in southern Arizona and I saw some things and it was pretty shocking, and the idea just kind of hit me. As I was writing that, I thought it would be really interesting to explore the modern American frontier and look at it, you know, really under a microscope. And so I came up with the idea for Hell or High Water and then again Wind River. But they were all inspired by events that were taking place, you know, within two people that I knew. And so people were telling me these stories about events that were happening in their lives, and I took those and, you know, built a world around them. There's a lot of thematic links. Beyond that, it's also really studying, you know, the nature of fatherhood and failure and grief. They're all really meditations on grief and moving on from a tragedy without ever getting closure. I was really intrigued by that notion. So I spent a lot of time, I live very, very close to the res. I spent a lot of time on the Pine Ridge Reservation. And the initial genesis for this idea was when I was on the res, there was this girl that was, you know, really respected in the community. And she had gotten a basketball scholarship. She's about to graduate high school. She disappeared. And then they found her, and she'd been killed. And it was just devastating to the community because this was a pillar. This was a good one, you know, a really good girl that had achieved so much. Never solved. And that happened in the late 90s, and it just burned in me. And so that was really the root of, and then I heard that same story time and time again.
So we liked this movie, didn't we?
Yes.
What did you like about it?
I thought it was, the pacing was really nice. I thought it was a beautiful location. I liked how the landscape echoed the theme of the story, or maybe the theme of the story echoed the landscape. The theme of the story or the landscape?
Both.
Well, the theme of the story is loss and being sort of forgotten in a barren land.
There's definitely isolation and loneliness and...
Mm-hmm. And Wyoming is a landscape not far from Jackson Hole.
The Wind River Indian Reservation is one of the poorest places in North America. Less than 100 miles as the crow flies from one of the richest county in North America, Teton County, where Jackson Hole is. And the contrasts are complete. I don't spend any time in the movie talking about Jackson Hole, but I focus on the reservation in the sense of isolation, an area where winters are brutal to an extreme, an area where 120 years ago, the Eastern Shoshone and Northern Arapaho would have moved out of there until next spring, and yet they've been forced to stay there through a winter in a place they shouldn't be, or they would choose not to be.
Or maybe far from a lot of places in a way. It almost made me think of how, like, the closest to Antarctica on the North American continent. Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah, I mean, one thing that you see is just how horrible the winters are on this Indian reservation. And the initial murder investigation deals with someone who is basically froze to death. And they talk about the specifics of what happens to your lungs in this environment and stuff. And so, yeah, it's a really ominous kind of thing. But there's this whole mystery element that I thought was really neat. Like the fact that it deals with, in some ways, it deals with similar themes to Ghost Story, which we talked about last time, in terms of loss, although I felt like there was more.
I like this way better.
You like this way better than Ghost Story? All right, fair enough. But Jeremy Renner's character, we find out, I won't give away too much, is dealing with a loss, and that's sort of slowly revealed.
More than one loss, perhaps.
Yeah, maybe. And that's sort of slowly revealed throughout the story. So his character, this tracker, as he's assisting the young FBI agent, is kind of helping himself or trying to get some closure sort of vicariously. Did you like Elizabeth Olsen's performance? Did you think she was good?
Well, you made me think of something when you were talking about the cold landscape. One of my the most memorable moments, and not in terms of plot, but in terms of just like this little bit, is where Elizabeth Olsen, the FBI agent, shows up. And she's like, okay, well, take me, you know, to the body. Not trying to be rude, but it's pretty cold.
Well, I'm sorry to meet under these circumstances. So do you want to show me the body? I don't mean to be rude. I'm just freezing my ass off here. So the quicker, the better.
Yeah? Well, that's going to get a lot worse if you go out there dressed like that.
Your body's 5 miles on snowmobile. I'm afraid you'd be dead by the time we got there.
I got the call when I was at a weapons horse in Riverton. So this is what I've got.
Well, you should have a winter gear bag in that truck.
Well, no, that's not a government vehicle. It's a rental. I flew in from Vegas, so I'm just the closest agent to the scene. You don't think I can make it?
You're from Vegas?
No, I'm not. I'm not from Vegas. I'm stationed there. I'm from Fort Lauderdale. I'm sorry. If we're gonna keep having this conversation,
let's get you fixed up inside. It's gonna be great.
Thanks. Sorry. Excuse me. Thanks.
See what they send us.
it's just such a harsh and such a unforgiving landscape that she is sent to go without any information. I like that too, how she's sent to this place not knowing what to expect.
Yeah, it was, she says something like, I was the closest agent.
Yeah, yeah.
And so,
she didn't have anything to wear. And that scene too, which I won't give away, but I really like how she fits into the landscape and how that shocks everyone around her at first. And I like that scene. I can't tell you more.
Yeah, no, it's cool. I mean, they definitely established the cold early on. I feel like there's a scene where Jeremy Renner like rides a snowmobile and then like is going to get off the snowmobile to go on a little expedition or, you know, whatever. And he gets into like this even more dense like snow gear that he has in a backpack with him. So it's like you can't just, you actually have to prepare yourself in this like extra way in the environment they're in.
But I feel like that part is like about blending in and being camouflaged.
It is.
And hiding too.
I think it is, but I feel like he's layering up also. I don't know, maybe I'm wrong.
No, maybe that's true, but I feel like there's a lot of this idea about like becoming nothing, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I think movies like this are interesting. The director said something about moving on from a tragedy without ever getting closure. And I think that's an interesting idea. And I think it's something that, as far as real life goes, not that we really need to bring that in so much here, but how it's not that easy to get closure, especially when something horrible happens. And I think that is definitely something that fascinates me about the human condition and how we try to move on. And, you know, to what extent you're successful, that I guess just depends on the person. But
well, the way that you say that, when you say how we're not going to really necessarily bring in real life here, I think that the whole movie is about real life. I think that it's about something that is very real and not fantastical at all. I think that it's so real that I think it's extremely real, and that's what it's about. So I think it's interesting because I guess maybe your idea is that we don't need to have to make things all fit into something realistic, but I think that it comes out of something that's realistic. And in the end, it was interesting. No spoilers. But at the end, I think it gives you a little taste of what the inspiration for this movie. And it echoes something that happens in the movie. How about that?
Yeah. Yeah, no, I guess I just meant like, I feel like that's a criticism I hear from a lot of people about movies. They're like, well, that would never really happen and things like that. And
no,
you're right.
No,
this is a much more
saying.
Grounded narrative as far as that goes. It's believable and there's not a lot of stretches in logic as far as I was concerned. And the mystery, like I said, that element is neat. I mean, as with The Big Sick, which we also talked about, the movie has some things going for it in that it's got this barren, snowy landscape location. Like, that's not like that's never been used before. But then you've got this sort of mystery element, the Native American reservation element, and then the loss element. And so those things together, I think, make for a really interesting story.
And there's this one statistic. They basically say how this area of land in Wyoming is huge and vast, but yet they have like just a handful of police officers patrolling it or guarding over it.
It was like six officers.
Something really tiny. And like the idea of how almost like the Wild West, right? Like some frontier, this area where anything could happen and go outside of the law, not be able to be seen. And the thing that also echoes that is the whole idea of that there's a storm coming. And I think that's very interesting as well. Metaphorically and literally, there's a storm coming. So I thought that was well played.
The elements are almost like an antagonist in our film because they're the thing that keeps getting in our way from trying to get as much information as possible. I mean, there are so many stories about people who have gone missing during the wintertime in locations like this where people will die just looking for them, so they can't go look for the body. They'll wait for spring.
There's an interesting statistic that's like the last two cards of the movie that works, but it was a little bit like, huh, okay. I guess that's what this movie is partially about too, and I didn't fully understand that. But it's an interesting statistic that comes up, and it's a creepy one too. So I was thinking about movies to pair with this one. I don't know if any occurred to you, but the first couple that came to mind were one that's like an old family favorite that I used to watch with my mom and dad, and we haven't watched here yet. We should watch at some point. It's called Shoot to Kill. It's from 1988. It's got Sidney Poitier and Tom Berenger.
An unstoppable killer is on the loose. A killer no one has ever seen in a place no one has ever been.
Jeff! Enter FBI Special Expert Warren Stanton.
This man is mine.
It's the very best.
Get down!
Against the very worst.
I'm going to pull the trigger!
And only one will survive. Sidney Poitier, Tom Berenger.
Let her go or die!
Shoot to kill. Rated R.
Starts Friday at a theater near you.
Basically, the plot is just similar in that Poitier plays an FBI agent who hires a tracker, played by Tom Berenger, to follow this, I think, serial killer or this murderer into the woods of this sort of remote area to try and catch him. And so it's a snowy landscape. It's, you know, FBI and tracker. And so that similarity. Other than that, the lost stuff isn't quite, it's not as, the pathos of it is not nearly what this movie is. But it's an interesting movie. And so that's one I thought of. I thought of Winter's Bone.
Mike Satterfield, A1 Bonds.
What is it you want?
We hold the bond on Jessup Dolly. He didn't show for court.
That ain't no run.
Jessup signed over everything. If he doesn't show at trial, see, the way the deal works is, y'all gonna lose his house here. Got some place to go?
I'll find him.
Girl, I've been looking.
I said I'll find him.
That seems like a good, because you're dealing with a very poor family and a mystery and sort of a remote location that's a little bit sketch as far as the law enforcement in that area. You know, a strong female performance, just like Elizabeth Olsen gives here, in that case from Jennifer Lawrence. It's not quite as strong a performance as that, because she's like the lone hero, really, in Winter's Bone, and she's up against the odds with very little help. And in this case, Elizabeth Olsen's character has Jeremy Renner to help a little bit.
And a few others.
Yeah, a few others. But so that's another one that occurred to me. I was thinking maybe Lone Star.
40 years ago, under Sheriff Charlie Wade, Rio County was as corrupt as they came.
That Sheriff Wade, he could get ugly.
Then, Buddy Deed showed up.
How about you lay that shield on this table and vanish?
You're a dead man.
They called him a legend.
He was a unique individual.
They called him a champion of justice.
The day that man died, they broke the damn mold.
His son is about to find out the truth.
Follow me.
I'm Sheriff Deed.
Sheriff Deed is dead, honey. He's just Sheriff Junior.
We found a body out by Fort McKenzie yesterday. You got any idea who might have put him there?
A hell of a time to bring up old business.
That badge
didn't come out of a cereal box.
Start digging holes in this county, no telling what will come up.
The John Sayles movie, did we ever watch that one? It was a big deal to me when it came out. It's a Western. It's the farthest thing from snow. It's set in Texas, but it's like Chris Cooper's character is this sheriff of a small town, and they find a body that looks to be the body of an old sheriff that there's a mystery as to whether or not Chris Cooper's dad, who was also a sheriff, may have killed him. So they're like, I don't know, there's this small town mystery kind of element to it that I like. I think those are the big ones. Anything come to mind for you?
Well, it's funny that you said Winter's Bone, because that's one flash that I had when I don't know if it was last night when we watched it or just earlier today. I don't know why. But the other thing is, now here's my movie amnesia or life amnesia that I have. But one of the main characters is a Native American woman, and she goes and she parks on the ice.
Oh, Frozen River.
Frozen River.
Where's Daddy?
Probably in Atlantic City by now. He's gambling away the money for our house.
Are we even gonna look for him?
Hey!
What are you doing with my car?
Had the keys in it. The guy driving it got on a bus. I got a friend who might buy that.
It's not for sale.
He's a smuggler. He'll pay more than it's worth.
I'm not driving just anybody across the border. It's a crime.
There's no border here. This is free trade between nations.
About the border patrol.
I'm not gonna stop you. You're white.
This is about the woman that was with you. She's known to have brought illegal aliens into the country.
You can't come up with a cash. You have lost your $1,500 deposit.
I can get a job, you know.
You're going to school. I just need one more run to get the double.
and then I'm out of this.
Frozen River is very much like this movie. Yeah,
about that. Oh, and it's ironic they both have river.
Yeah,
see,
oh, that's a good pick.
Yeah, so I think that one would be nice with it.
Yeah, I feel like I can't remember, but I feel like there's kind of a mystery to that one too.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. Okay. From what I recall,
I remember liking
it. But I just had like, it's funny because for both the two movies, Winter's Bone and Frozen River, I had more of a visual as opposed to any like it's like super weird. It's all picture that I see in my head, like I see scenes from it as opposed to words or plot.
Yeah,
that makes sense.
No, I feel like the landscape is similar. They don't quite make it out to be as deadly as it is in Wind River, but I totally thought of Frozen River too. Yeah, that's great. What about Fargo? Doesn't quite line up, but
I don't feel that.
No, you don't feel like
that. I think the tone is just different.
Yeah, no, a totally different tone. You're right.
Yeah,
just was thinking female law enforcement, mysterious. No, it's actually not that much of a mystery, really. We kind of know. Anyway, so those are just some other movies that if you like them, maybe you'd like this in that sort of video store employee recommendation kind of way. As for the Blu-ray itself, it's got some deleted scenes and then what they call a behind-the-scenes video gallery, which is about 10 minutes, and it's got short interviews with and B-roll of them on the set of Jeremy Renner and then Elizabeth Olsen and then Taylor Sheridan. So there's no commentary, which I kind of wish there was a commentary because I kind of like to hear his thoughts. But as with most new films, there's a lot of press kit material that can be found on YouTube. And I'll have tried to pepper this episode with some thoughts from Taylor Sheridan and maybe from the actors that I've found because they do have a lot of interesting things to say. But I don't know. Overall, this is among my favorite movies of the year. I think it might be for you too.
I'm bad when it comes to remembering everything I saw in the year, but I did really like it and it kept me up, you know.
Yeah.
That's the thing, is at night when I'm in bed and we're watching a movie, I'm starting to fade, and I almost did even at this movie. It was like, I think there was like 40 minutes left to go and I was almost not making it.
And it should be said that this isn't about
rejuvenated and watched it till the end.
It should be said this isn't about quality of movie. It's just we both are tired and you especially have longer, harder days than I do, and so it takes an extra special movie to engage on the level to keep you awake. And again, I don't mean that as like any movie that doesn't is boring. It's just like that's when you can tell that a movie has really got something, is when you're like, oh yeah, I want to know what happens here, and right, I should probably go to bed, but I really can't because I'm just so hooked into this. And it's that kind of movie,
right? And there's some movies that I really, really love, but they have like this ambient kind of feeling to them, and or they're slower paced, and I may just like drift off in them, you know. They're sort of more dreamlike and ethereal. And this, even though in some ways there were some elements of that, for whatever reason it got me. I mean, it could have helped that our daughter came in that 40 minute mark and fell asleep and again and re-woke me to finish the last 40 minutes. So I'm gonna give that to Raven.
Yeah. Wow. But yeah, it's a good movie. We definitely recommend it. Blu-ray's out now from Lionsgate. Check it out. Thank you, wife.
No comment.
Thank you for talking movies. I like it when we talk movies. Do you like to talk movies?
Sounds like you're asking me if I like to talk dirty.
No. That's well, not.
You can leave
that's
that
out. A whole other podcast.
Good night.
Everyone have a lovely and Blu-ray filled week, and I will talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
I think Taylor wrote you a note at some point. Yeah. Yeah. And he read the note over the phone to me that he was sending Jeremy. And I realized he was a very good writer at that point because it was a great sell for the. But I think we flew Taylor in and he met at your house. And
so did the note turn the tide as far as to get you to open it as quickly as you did? What would have happened if he hadn't written that extra note?
I wouldn't be sitting here.
Really?
Yeah. There's a lot of people in my life that that I trust and love, I've worked with for a very long time, that you should read this. Yeah, you got to read this. I'm like, no, I'm not reading anything. I'm a daddy. Fuck off, essentially. I was telling everybody. And then finally, Taylor came around. Like ever again, everyone I love and trusted, like, you got to read this. It's amazing. I don't care how amazing it is. I'm a dad. I'm retiring. I'm out of here. And then Taylor, he left a voicemail and he sent this note. And ultimately what grabbed me is like, dude, just read, this is all I remember from the note, whether it's eloquent or not. I said, like, dude, just read fucking 10 pages of this thing. And if it sucks, I'm going to buy you an amazing bottle of booze and we're going to share it together. We're going to have a great time. I'm like, okay, I'll read this thing. So I read the first 10 pages and I'm like, this ass, it's amazing. And, you know, I could not say no. But then I had to think, oh, Taylor's not directed a movie before. I really need to go down that road with the first time director. Right. And this guy walks into my house and asks a few questions to him, and his emotional intelligence just shot out. And yeah, he looks and acts like a cowboy, but he's eloquent and Shakespearean and thoughtful and emotional and compassionate and as they come. And I could not say no. I'm like, let's go do this, and I'm in.
What's it like for the two of you? Obviously, you've worked together before on the Avengers movie. It's kind of a different budget, and I'm sure some different creature comforts than you would have filming.
Different costumes, yeah.
Is it fun to then, after the two of you know each other a bit, to work on something that's as kind of intimate and scrappy as this film, having done a huge budgeted film together?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely, because I think... The first time I met Jeremy was a really overwhelming experience shooting the end of Avengers Age of Ultron in Italy. And yeah, we were like ushering 200 extras into a fake ship that wasn't there. And and I was like, I've never done this before. What's going on? And Jeremy held my hand through everything and was helping me out. And to go from there to literally holding on to him on a snowmobile going down a mountain, I don't know how fast we would be going without like any seatbelt, obviously. You're just like holding on with your thighs and your hands. And it does help to have that kind of trust in someone and to have that kind of history. But also when we were filming Avengers, our characters, oddly enough, have a very like close relationship where he kind of becomes a family member. Or they rely on one another. So it was something that I think we were both happy to get to actually flesh out characters together. And I know for me, I felt like I had an amazing opportunity to get to work with Jeremy and get to learn from him in a different landscape and world of a film. Because the Avenger films are a lot of fun, but I think we all know that you don't get as much time to dive deep. And with something like this, you get to learn from really great actors and directors, and you get to have that time.